Hello there, my happy little ramblers, and welcome to another weekend, and of course, another instalment of Reese Rambles, the official podcast of Control Alt Reese. I'm Reese, and I will be your host for the next half an hour or however long it takes. These aren't entirely consistent, are they? But yes, hello, here we are. And of course, a week now until my 40th birthday. And I know I've been banging on about this for the longest time, but it is kind of relevant this time. Because I was talking to my wife, Catherine, the other night, and I was saying, you know, we're going to be away for my birthday. I mean, I know she's got some surprise stuff planned, some friends of ours involved, and I don't know exactly what the plans are, what exactly we're going to be doing. I don't like spoiling surprises. I'm not one of those kids who always used to go, like, hunting for their Christmas presents and stuff, because, I like a pleasant surprise, you know? She's not like that at all. She hates anything... anything like that, but I've managed to avoid any spoilers or anything like that. But I usually record these on a Friday. It's the 8th of March as I'm recording this, around midday sort of time. It's just when I happen to find the time to sit down and hit record. And we're not going to be here, so I said, well, maybe I should just miss a week for the first time ever. I mean, it's a special occasion. People aren't going to mind if I miss a week for my own 40th birthday. I mean, it's a big birthday, you know. We've got a big long weekend planned, apparently. And she said no. She said absolutely not. You are not allowed to. No, she didn't say that. But she did say it would be a shame. And I agree that it would be a shame for me to miss next week. So I'm actually going to be here recording on Monday. So that will be the 9th, 10th. 11th, and I know that's only 3 days away at the time of recording, only 2 days away at the time of you listening to this or watching this. And I thought, well, okay, we'll come up with something that we can do on the Monday. I usually like to have a whole week's worth, a whole week to prepare and kind of look up stories and think of stuff to talk about and find a video of the week and all of that. At least put some effort into it. But last night I was watching Clint's latest Patreon update. So every month he does a monthly roundup where he talks about, the videos that he's released that month. Just stuff that's going on in his life. It's very similar to this. It's a kind of quite a similar sort of concept with the old update thing. And I know Techmoan does one that he calls the Oddcast every month. And it's an idea I've been kind of pondering as well. But I think I'm kind of overcommitted on stuff at the moment anyway. So it's certainly not something I'll be doing myself. But anyway, rambling aside, one of the things that Clint does as part of his monthly update is a Q&A, where basically underneath the post, his patrons ask him questions, and these questions are about literally anything. They're about, you know, his life, and I mean, he had a question about his favourite cars and stuff this week, and questions about his sort of YouTube filmmaking process. And then every month he goes through them all one by one and he answers them all, and he's, you know, he doesn't avoid them, he kind of answers them honestly, and he's quite open in these things. And yeah, it's quite refreshing and quite nice to kind of see the guy behind the videos. And I thought I could do that, actually. I could steal that idea. Not make it a Patreon exclusive because, like I say, I'm already kind of overcommitted on that side of things. But do it as a 40th birthday ramble for next weekend. So I am going to throw it open to you. And I'm saying this right at the beginning here, just so you don't miss it. I will, of course, mention it again at the end. But yeah, if you have any questions, you know, I will be doing a Q&A. If you get them submitted before I sit down to record next week's instalment on Monday, I'll go through them all and I'll answer them. I'll screenshot them all. There's not really anything I kind of want to avoid or not talk about. And let's go through them and answer some questions. So if you have any questions about, I don't know, particular videos of mine or about my channel in general, about the process, about the second channel, questions about the studio, about future plans, about people I've worked with, about anything, what's my favourite cheese, anything like that, just ask me down in the comments section below. Or if you're listening to this on Spotify, I think you can send me a message through the Spotify thing. Someone's done that in the past and that seems to have worked quite successfully. My email address, that's out there. It's on the About page on my YouTube channel. It's on my website. Send me an email, send me a question on Twitter or on my Discord server or whatever. I'll gather them up over the weekend and we'll sit down and we'll go through them. It may end up being a slightly longer one. I have done a Q&A in the past, which was kind of for my Discord members. But let's just throw it out open to everyone. Let's do this as a birthday thing. So that's what I'm going to be doing next week. And if you have a question, yeah, ask that. Probably do it now rather than leaving it until Monday, because you'll probably forget if you're anything like me. Or hopefully you're a bit better organised than me. So yeah, that's that. And of course, I always open these things by talking about myself and about what I've been up to in the preceding week. So there's one other thing that I need to talk about, which is a video that's gone public. In fact, it went public just this morning at the time of recording. And it was this one, all about the Pi Dog. And I thought I'd talk a little bit about the behind the scenes of this one. Let's just mute it and hit play so we can have some stuff going on in the background. And yeah, as you can see, the includes paid promotion indicator there, loud and proud in the corner of the screen, because I was sent this robot kit for free by Sunfounder, the company that make it. And I explain all of this in the video, but I get offered so much stuff to review. I think I've had like three emails already this morning, although they're all from the same company because they're really desperate for me to review whatever. I think it's like an office chair or something. Of course, I did the one with the FlexiSpot standing desk a couple of months back, and usually I just ignore them. But this one, I thought, robot dog, how cool is that? I like robots, I like dogs, I like building stuff, I like tinkering with stuff. Looked into it a bit, saw that it was all kind of open source and kind of an open platform, and you know, it all runs on Python, it's all GPL v2 licensed, and I thought, how cool does that sound? Actually, I'd quite like to build one of those. And I said to them, look, I don't want to commit to anything. I'm not going to sign a contract. I don't want a list of bullet points to read out. I'm not going to send you the video for approval before it goes public. You know, they're my terms. If you're still happy to send me one, then I'll quite happily receive it. But I can't guarantee that I'll do a video or anything like that. Which, when I'm interested in stuff, is generally what I say. The desk was a little bit different. Obviously, that was very expensive, and I already knew from talking to people that it was going to be good and it was going to be exactly what I wanted. Essentially, I was ready to buy one anyway, but you know, that worked out very nicely. Although, to be fair, I mean, their demands weren't even that bad. It was just you know, can you mention like these top five features, which I would have mentioned as part of a review anyway. But yeah, this one was completely open-ended. And they said yes. They were like, yep, no obligation. What's your address? We'll just send it to you. And that was it. That was the last I heard from them. And then this thing arrived in the post, and I kind of sat on it for a couple of weeks. And I thought, let's build it. Let's just build it on camera and you know, see what I think. And I mean, this is a bit of a spoiler, but I was very pleasantly surprised by it, actually. It's quite a nice kit, quite nicely put together. It is expensive, and that is something that I do kind of talk about in the video. Although, as a couple of people have pointed out to me since that video went up, you know, it's compare it to the cost of like a sufficiently complex Lego set or something like that. Actually, you know, it's £155 or $180. You do get quite a lot for your money. So yeah, I just wanted to talk about that video really and how that came about and why I've done yet another you know, quite rare sponsored video on my channel, because I mean, I'm not against the concept of sponsored videos. I don't like people shoving stuff down our throats constantly trying to sell us stuff, but hey, sometimes this stuff comes along and you think, actually, that's quite interesting, let's have a look at that and see what it's about. And that's kind of how that came about. So that literally went public 2 hours ago at the time of recording. As you can see, it's had 324 views. I won't show you the stats and stuff because they're pretty meaningless in the first couple of hours, and it is underperforming compared to my previous video, which was about those Atari 2600 boxes. That was a particularly successful one, and also sponsored videos don't do that well, and I was very, very upfront about it being a sponsored video in all the tweets and things that I've shared around the place, because I feel very apologetic when I do these things, and you'll get that from the video as well if you watch it, that I did feel the need to kind of apologise at the beginning, at the end, and just say, look, I thought this looked interesting, and it turns out that it is quite interesting, and I'm really sorry, but I'm going to have to do a video on this, even though I got it for free. I tried to be sort of quite fair and balanced about it. That's just how I sort of want to do things on my channel. So yeah, that's that. A bit too early to talk about stats and stuff, but that's gone out, and of course I'll link to that in the usual places, so you can go and check it out. But yeah, I think enough waffling about me for now. There's some stuff that's happened this week that I found quite interesting, and I thought that I would talk about it. So let's do that. So Amstrad, of course, I've got to talk about the Amstrad news. I don't think I've ever talked about Amstrad on this channel. In fact, I don't think I've ever covered. Did I do some stuff with the PC 1512, or was that just on my website? Yeah. Amstrad, kind of largely, I say they largely passed me by when I was a kid. I did, my best friend when I was a kid, his dad was quite well off. Obviously, their family were quite well off. And he was into Amstrad in quite a big way and kind of had the latest computers and stuff. And I do remember when we were very young, he had the CPC with the built-in 3-inch disk drive. I very specifically remember like the weird little 3-inch disks that took. And then a bit later on, I remember them getting an Amstrad PC as well. Probably the 1512 or the 1640. And I remember playing with that. I remember it had an ad-lib card in it. And I remember playing a game which I've since discovered is called Dark Ages. And it's like a platformer. And it's something I've been meaning to make a video on. Because it turns out here's a bit of a tangent, but it was actually the very first game to feature ad-lib music. So yeah, the music that was actually composed. It's like a kind of a medieval dungeon-themed platform type game. Nothing special really. It's very, very much of its era, of those kind of early PC era. But yeah, it kind of stands out for that specific reason. Obviously, I didn't know that when I was playing it as a kid. Anyway, that's kind of my limited experience with Amstrad stuff, just kind of poking around it at a friend's house. But of course, well aware of it, well aware of Alan Sugar, of course, Lord Sir Alan Sugar, or whatever he insists on being called this week. You know, bit of a... No, let's not go there. Personally, I don't find him a bit grating. But anyway, he has announced on Twitter this week that he has finally purchased the rights back to the Amstrad brand name, which belonged. He actually sold them to Sky, obviously who do the satellite TV broadcasty stuff here in the UK, 17 years ago. Apparently, I do remember when this happened. Because, of course, one of the things that Amstrad made were the set-top boxes for satellite TV. And I think Sky wanted to kind of bring that manufacturing in-house. So, you know, he wasn't doing anything on the computer side of things at the time. I think the emailer was around that time. I vaguely remember selling those at a previous job in a previous life, an electrical retailer, and having boxes and boxes of those and not selling any of them because they were terrible. Of course, the whole thing's become a bit of a joke in hindsight, but... he has bought back the rights to the Amstrad brand name. Not much else announced really off the back of that. The name will be used to launch a new performance marketing agency, Amstrad Digital. So yeah, amstraddigital.co.uk. Wishing Tom Darcy and Joe Barron all the best of luck with their new venture and looking forward to being your business partner. So is this something to do with The Apprentice? Obviously, Alan... I don't know, is the host of The Apprentice here in the UK, the British version of that. And I don't watch it. And like I say, I don't. The guy gets on my nerves and the whole thing's all very contrived and annoying and doesn't really have much to do with how actual business works. But yeah, Amstrad Digital, bit of a missed opportunity, I think, with this. Just another faceless, you know, digital marketing. Is this AI art I see here on the homepage, maybe? I don't know. Just another digital marketing agency. I think his son owns a digital marketing agency, and I'm not quite sure what it's called or what he does. But anyway, yeah, so it doesn't look like he's planning on using that name to give us a CPC mini or anything like that in the immediate future, which is a bit of a shame, but you never know. You never know what he might have up his sleeve. But yeah, Amstrad is back with its founder. Of course, the AMS in Amstrad being Alan Sugar's initials. And don't ask me what his middle name is because I can't remember. Let's say Michael, maybe. So yeah, that's that. Thought that was interesting. So if you're terminally online like myself, constantly doom-scrolling through the social media networks and wishing that you had more interesting things going on in your life, you'll no doubt have noticed all the chatter about Nintendo this week and how they've taken down another emulator and how this is a terrible thing for game preservation and, you know, all typical Nintendo, all they're interested in is making money and squashing these, these people who are only interested in game preservation. And I thought I would talk a little bit about that because I've got some interesting thoughts about that. There's been a big kind of knee-jerk reaction as always, but yeah, this seems quite interesting. So yes, $2.4 million this company has settled out of court. I can't remember the name of the company. Let's just check my notes. Tropic Haze is the name of the group that were making this emulator. They're actually making two. One of them is called Yuzu, which emulated the Nintendo Switch, which of course is Nintendo's current gen console, and one called Citra, which is a Nintendo 3DS emulator, which of course is a dead platform. Nintendo discontinued support for the eShop and stuff. I think that was kind of early last year. So two kind of quite different animals, really, quite different beasts. And I've seen some really hot takes on this. Of course, Nintendo, big evil company, taking down game preservation efforts. Game preservation important for the future of gaming. Totally get all of that. You know, I've spoken about game preservation at length on the Rambles in the past, and it's something I'm a very big supporter of and a very big kind of proponent of. Very important to preserve that piece of our kind of digital history. But actually, when you're starting to dig into the actual details of this, there's some stuff that doesn't quite add up. I think what I will do is, first we'll take a look at the website, the Yuzu and Citra websites, which both come up with this same message here. We write today to inform you that Yuzu and Yuzu's support of Citra are being discontinued, effective immediately. Always been against piracy, started the projects in good faith out of passion for Nintendo and its consoles and games. We're not intending to cause harm, but we see now because our projects can circumvent Nintendo's technological protection measures and allow users to play games outside of authorized hardware, they have led to extensive piracy. In particular, we've been deeply disappointed when users have used our software to leak game content prior to its release and ruin the experience for legitimate purchasers and fans. Now, that line is quite telling because essentially, this isn't some kind of noble open source collaborative effort. It's a Patreon backed thing, and they were making basically $30,000 a month out of this emulator, emulating the Switch, which, like I say, is Nintendo's current gen console. So there's not really an argument for game preservation there because, I mean, obviously in 10 years' time, having an accurate and good Switch emulator will be very important. But at the moment, Nintendo are still actively selling games for this. You can go out and buy one and you can buy the games. And they had instructions on their website on how to rip games, which, fair enough, I mean, in big parts of the world, you are allowed to make backups for your own personal use. That's not a problem. I genuinely don't see a problem with that. Obviously, it is quite often used, as a front for piracy or whatever else. But hey, within the letter of the law, that's fine. But this line talking about, deeply disappointed when users have used our software to leak game content prior to its release. Now, it's quite well known that the actual developers of this on their own Discord server were sharing unreleased games that had been leaked from Nintendo. Basically under the guise of, we want this to work perfectly in our emulator from day one on release, so we're all going to have access to this so we can develop it. Now, obviously, they're kind of handling code that's been leaked and they're kind of disseminating it and spreading it amongst themselves, which I think is kind of the major issue here and kind of the reason that Nintendo decided to put a stop to this. There's quite a good take that I saw on the RMC Discord from Dana, who is a supporter of the channel, long-time follower of my channel. And she basically sums it up really well. She's a huge Nintendo fan and said it better than I ever could. I've seen a lot of people panicking over nothing here. The important thing to note is it has nothing to do with emulation broadly. This is all about verifiable profit from active piracy. On a scale of tens of thousands of dollars per month and the established legal precedent of digital encryption, SNES emulator doesn't need to crack modern digital encryption to function. It just reads binary data. Yuzu had massive revenue spikes every time highly anticipated games leaked online, and the geniuses tracked what users were playing and when. So there's a giant list of all the crimes they facilitated and got paid for. It's extremely clear-cut that they were on the wrong side of the law and actively hurting Nintendo's current business. Don't do that, and there's nothing to worry about. And I think the proof is kind of in the pudding with that, in the fact that Nintendo, there's lots of emulators out there, and they generally don't go after them and don't, they're still trying to sell us the same old NES games and SNES games and N64 games that they always have. And they don't go after the developers of those emulators, but they have specifically gone after this one because they're making an awful lot of money. They're leaking, they're spreading leaked games, certainly between the developers, if not between other members and users of the community, and tracking what people are actually playing on their emulator. And, Yeah, so not quite as clear-cut as some of the sort of early reactions had made out, but I do think that game preservation is very important. Of course, you know, we should be able to play the games of our childhood 20, 30, 40 years on and still be able to enjoy them in some form or another when the original hardware is dead. So it's important that these emulators exist. And the sad thing about this is obviously that Citra has been lost as part of it as well, which by all accounts was an excellent Nintendo 3DS emulator. And it's emulating what's essentially a dead platform, which Nintendo aren't selling anymore. And you have to wonder, would, you know, if that's all that they were doing, would Nintendo have gone after them? I don't think so. But again, just the interesting debate about preservation versus piracy and all that. I think these emulators need to exist. I think they serve a very important purpose, but the way that these people were kind of going about this doesn't sound right to me. It sounds like there was some dodgy business going on, and actually, yeah, $2.4 million. And there's a lot of people talking about, does this set a legal precedent as well? Should other emulators be afraid, you know, other emulated developers? If they end up going to court under similar charges, can people turn around and say, well, look, you know, these people settled for 2.4 million, so you should too. And actually, no, because it's an out-of-court settlement, because there wasn't any kind of ruling or any kind of judgment, it doesn't set a legal precedent. Obviously, we're still kind of up in the air, and that's something that's not really been tested in court. And probably the best outcome for both sides and for other emulated developers in general, although, of course, the whole thing is a very ugly business, as you can see. But yeah, interesting story, and perhaps not quite what it seems and not quite what some of the initial reactions online have quite made it out to be. So I thought I'd just take a closer look at that and just kind of examine what was going on. And Yuzu and Citra are no more. People have forked it. People are trying to sort of continue the development of those. Lots of very valuable development work, of course. But perhaps without the surrounding culture of stuff that was going on and upsetting the legal bigwigs at Nintendo. So two big meaty news stories this week and my big meaty opinions on those. And of course, the clock relentlessly marches on and I try to target half an hour or so for these. So let's move on to my newest feature, one that a lot of you seem to be enjoying, actually. I've had some really good feedback about this. And that is, of course, the video of the week. I'll skip all the preamble about me not owning a kazoo and not having a theme tune for it yet. One day that day will come. But yes, and this is very much along that same vein of game preservation and gaming history and preserving these important relics of this industry, which I think is very kind of culturally important. And, you know, it's important to preserve this stuff before it all succumbs to bit rot and disappears. And this specifically concerns a developer called Archer MacLean, who you may have heard of, a really well-known British developer. We'll just check out his Wikipedia page here. And he very sadly passed away in December 2022 and was quite a prolific collector of gaming stuff. Obviously, he worked on some arcade ports and things and had a collection of arcade machines, which they've kind of started to go out to the community. Loads of development stuff, documentation and old bits of code and prototypes and stuff like that in his possession, in his personal collection. And yeah, that's kind of started to make its way out to people. So he was 60 in 2022 when he sadly passed on, and he was the author of Drop Zone on the Atari 8-bit machines, which of course was also ported to various other 8-bit platforms. Fantastic game, pretty iconic game that. And of course the Jimmy White's Whirlwind Snooker series from the early 90s, which I very much remember at the time, and of course being quite sort of revolutionary and quite interesting, even as a kid who wasn't particularly interested in snooker. Are there many kids that are interested in snooker? I mean, there was less to do in the early 90s. And of course, Commodore 64, International Karate, and IK Plus, the sequel, and a list of other stuff. And one that I've only just discovered, which was called Wheel Spin, which came out in 2009 on the Nintendo Wii. And apparently he was involved with that as well, which... reception. The game received unfavourable reviews, according to review aggregation website Metacritic, 37 out of 100. So, perhaps probably something he doesn't want to be remembered for. But anyway, speaking of stuff that he is remembered for, I saw this video come up on Games That Weren't. Now, Games That Weren't, one of their guys, Ross, really helped me out with the Atari Panther research that I was doing a while back. Of course, that console that was cancelled in the late 80s by Atari. They then went on to release the Jaguar, which was kind of similar in some ways. And yeah, he was really, really helpful with that. And I saw this pop up on their Twitter. So much Twitter-driven stuff, isn't there? And it was I thought this video was fascinating, and it just doesn't have all that many views. I mean, it's got, what, 580 views in 2 days? Did I only just load this? Or, yeah, 590 views in 2 days. So, and I thought this was a really interesting sort of tale of preservation and stuff. So, of course, Archer worked on those other ports and things, all quite well-known stuff. But, of course, he also had prototypes for some other games, including a long-lost and long-rumoured prototype of a port of Robotron, which seemed like it was quite far, quite advanced in development. You know, all the movement code and the character sprites and stuff were all done, and it was kind of started to shape up to become an actual, you know, proper full-on port of the game, and for whatever reason didn't get finished. Maybe, didn't have the rights to it or whatever else, I'm not quite sure. And what they've done here, and this is absolutely fantastic. So Chris Wilkins from Fusion Retro Books basically ended up in the possession of some of Archer's old development discs, mainly for, only for the Atari 8-bit platform. And what they've done is they've gone through these discs and they've basically rescued all of these prototypes, got everything running, all of his old basic code and stuff like that, documented them, imaged the discs, and actually released the whole thing, so you can actually download the disc images and play with it yourself. And I was pondering doing a second channel video on this where I actually load up these discs and kind of go through everything, but I decided I didn't want to tread on their toes, because that's essentially exactly what they've done. So this video starts out just showing the box of discs that was kind of given to them. So yeah, just your standard 5 1/4 inch floppy discs. And then he talks a little bit about some of his games and some of his things that he's worked on over the years. And there's some really cool stuff in here. So there's like a test for a port of Donkey Kong, which basically like generates the play field with the girders and stuff. Doesn't really do much beyond that. And there are some other sort of demos in here. There's one that's kind of based on Tempest that can sort of generate the play fields for that. There's a fully functional Breakout clone, which looks really interesting and actually looks like a really decent clone of Breakout on that platform, and a load of other stuff. There's a, you know, like I say, all those art assets for that Robotron port, working code for that, and some drawing tests based around racing games. What's the name? Pole Position, of course, Atari's classic Pole Position. Other sort of sprite drawing and scaling routines and stuff like that that they've preserved on these discs. And like I say, you can download the disc images and you can play with it yourself. And it's just such a cool piece of history, and so cool that they've preserved this and actually shared it for everyone to enjoy. And I think this video is well worth a watch, because who's the guy in the video? I don't know who the narrator is in the video, but basically he, you know, talks through all of this stuff and kind of explains what it is and what's happening and how it works and how complete it is. And just a really fascinating sort of 21 minute 27 second journey through the history of those things. So yeah, important development work. I really enjoyed this. Of course, it's Atari related as well, and just a cool story all around, and one that deserves to have a bit more of a spotlight shone on it. So go and check that out. Right, that's all I've got for you this week. Not much in the way of big stories, I'm afraid, or background information on me and my musings and ramblings on things. But of course, next week we're going to have a lot more of that, and that is dependent upon your questions, of course, which I'm very much looking forward to reading down in the comment section via email, on social media. Oh, here comes the sandwich van right on cue. And thank you ever so much for watching, as always, and listening on YouTube and, of course, on the podcast platforms. I'll see you very soon. I'll be back here on Monday the 11th to record the follow-up to this, next week's ramble, which, of course, will be the answers to those questions, the AMA, Q&A, whatever you want to call it. So thank you very much for listening and watching. I hope you enjoy your weekend. And that's that. Bye.